All right, thank you for joining me on this episode of The Gospel Truth. I am your host, Marlo Wilson, and today we're taking a break from debates again. I have a whole bunch scheduled, a whole slew of debates, including myself. I will be debating on Friday, I will be debating myself. But we're taking a break for those debates. I have an interview today with Mr. Mike Jones, Michael Jones, Mr. IP himself. Has jumped on here with me, and we're going to be going through some good information of how to prepare for a debate. Not too many people are aware of how to do it. You know, they sort of just go off what they know. So I brought somebody who's very experienced in debates, who's had a number of debates, some very difficult debates, and I'm sure he can give us the rundown, the lowdown on how he prepares and what pointers he can give us in the efforts to prepare. But before we get into that, I do want to go over a couple announcements. Like I said, on December 25th at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I have a debate coming up against Andrew Griffin. Andrew Griffin is a Unitarian, and we're going to be debating, does Jesus need to be God in order to atone for the sins of the world? So that should be an interesting one. It's a different one, but it's probably going to turn into one of those debates where I'm going to have to go in real hard and defend the deity of Christ. So also on the 26th, the day after, I have two back-to-back debates. I have Jonathan McGlatchy versus John Gleason. He's also known as the Godless Engineer, and they're going to be debating the historicity of Jesus Christ. From what I understand, John Gleason is, I think he's actually debated Michael Jones. I think he debated him, and they had some history. So it should be interesting, the interaction between Jonathan McGlatchy and John Gleason, and see how that goes. October 30th, I have Ricky Cronin versus Miles Patrick. And Miles Patrick is a black Hebrew Israelite, and they're going to debating, is obedience to the law required for salvation? As you know, black Hebrew Israelites put a strong emphasis on applying those old Testament laws into their own lifestyle, and they feel that those laws need to be required in order for salvation. So Ricky Cronin, a believer in Christ, a Trinitarian, is going to be defending the fact that salvation is only in the Lord, that Christ fulfilled the law. And finally, November 1st at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I have Tyler Gray. He's also known as The Snake is Right on his YouTube channel, an atheist, is going to be debating Miles Kettleson, and they're going to be debating, can atheism account for objective morality? So that's just the next four shows that's coming up. Be on the lookout. If you go visit me on my YouTube page and on my Facebook page, I have updates on all the shows that's coming up that I have so far. If you have time, if you can take a couple seconds to go ahead and like and follow The Gospel Truth on YouTube and on Facebook, if you can follow and like and follow there, I would appreciate it. And also, take time, because you have a whole slew of believers that probably don't know this show is going on. So if you could take time to share this particular video, this program, I really appreciate it. And get this information out there. It's one thing that The Gospel Truth is about. We're about engaging the culture of Christian truth, and we do that with interviews, debates, and biblical lessons, you know. So yeah, I really desire for you to go out your way to just please share this information. Click that share button, like button, follow, wherever you have to do in order to get this content out there, because the content is extremely, extremely important. But with that said, another man, this man right here, Mike Jones, he's got a whole bunch of content out there. You know what I mean? He's been making videos for quite some time now, and the videos are done in such a pristine fashion. You know, they're very articulately made, very clear and concise. The information, the way he puts information, the thought process that goes into these videos is very clear that Mike Jones cares about education. He cares about an intellectual basis for the faith that we have. And that's one area that I appreciate. I appreciate the fact that not only Mike Jones, but all those out there, you know, like I said, Jonathan McGlatchy, you know, these guys out there who really care about the intellectual aspect of the Christian faith, that Christian faith is just not all about just Bible beating. There's an intellectual base that goes on top of the foundation of the scripture, that goes on top of the foundation of Christ himself. So we want to be able to do that in a manner, share our faith in a manner that's going to be able to challenge those skeptics out there. So with that said, I'm going to bring Mike Jones in, and I'm going to bring him in and let him, you know, give a quick rundown of himself. So let me get Mike Jones in. Go for it, Mike Jones. Give me a quick introduction to yourself, would you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, my name is Michael Jones. I run Inspiring Philosophy. Basically, I just run a YouTube channel, And our goal is to build an apologetic video library, have a video for every apologetic question out there. So other than that, I do engage in a lot of live debates. I've been told I'm pretty good at it. I don't know. I hope I am. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. All right. Thank you for joining me, Mike. I appreciate you, man. I love the humble response, man. You know you be out there killing it, Mike, man. You be out there killing it, man. So I appreciate the humble response. And once again, I thank you for joining me, man. I reached out to you maybe about 3 months ago, I think now. It's a while back now. I think about 2.5, 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you accepted the offer to come on. I really do appreciate you. As I said already, you know, the gospel truth is about training. You know what I mean? Debate, learning, defending the faith. You know what I mean? And it's always cool to be able to get guys like you on who has massive amounts of experience and dealing with some of the more difficult atheists out there. You know, when you come against your guys like Aaron Ra, you know what I mean? Those guys, you know what I mean, who present these arguments, and unless you have the wherewithal to be able to catch the nonsense that they spitting out, you know, you might allow them to get away with it. But you have done an excellent job at equipping not only yourself, but equipping the saints as well out there to who don't necessarily know the answers to those tough questions, you know, that somebody, a skeptic, might bring to them. So I really do appreciate you for that. So if you could you give me a rundown of the ministry, the full-blown ministry that you have going on?
Sure, yeah. As I said, you know, it's basically a video ministry. We create different videos to deal with different apologetic questions. In the past, we've primarily worked with videos defending the existence of God, arguing or presenting the evidence for God's existence. We're currently working through a series on Genesis 1 through 11 right now. We've done the resurrection argument, defended New Testament reliability. We've gone through a series on objective morality and dealt with other views as well. So we've done a lot of different things. And right now I'm doing a lot of research preparing for a pretty long series on the Old Testament.
Okay. Cool, man. Cool. Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I want us to be able to, you know, be able to know how to prepare, you know, for like debates and things like that. In your process of, you know, making these videos and being, I guess, the title of your organization is Inspiring Philosophy, you know. So mm-hmm. When God called you out of your sin, called you into salvation, at what point did he direct you to this area of ministry?
Well, I mean, I guess it would be pretty soon. I don't know if I really had like a specific moment I became a Christian. For me, it was like a process. I think it happened pretty early. I remember getting on MySpace and engaging in, you know, just sort of like debates on forums type of things, and doing pretty good in some areas, doing really bad in other areas, and sort of refining myself that way. So when people ask me, like, how do you get good at debating, I always say, well, you need to start online. I mean, you just go on Reddit, go on YouTube, go on Facebook, just try to debate with other people there. And that helps to refine a lot of what you do, because I did that for years before I even made a video.
Okay. Yeah, you know, as you know, these Facebook groups and everything, you know, it's a lot of chatter on those aspects, man. A lot of chatter on those forums to be able to go in there and converse and everything. And that's always good. But how many debates have you actually been in? Like, how many debates would you say that you actually been in?
About 20, I'd say. Most of them are on YouTube. I appeared on an atheist podcast, which was basically a back and forth kind of debate called Dogma Debates a while back. So I'd say around 20 or so.
Okay. Which one of those debates do you think posed the most difficulty, if you can go through the Rolodex, if you will, of the debates?
That's a good question. I don't know which would be the most difficult per se, because I feel like at the end of every debate, I feel like I pretty good about what I said and everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe the one with Cosmic Skeptic, because he's very sharp on his feet and he's pretty good at coming up with some objections, you know, right then and there. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's always about the moral argument, objective morality, and that's a little bit harder to lay out and explain than something that's more based in what we can observe.
Okay, so So when you pick your debate partners, right, when you pick the guys you're going to go up against, is there ever – how much do you vet them before you agree to debating them? How much do you vet them? Does it take like a couple of days or something? Or are you like, well, I'm kind of familiar with this guy, so, yeah, I'll take him on real quick?
Yeah, sometimes it'll take a couple of days because I want to look them over, make sure they're not a crazy person, make sure they're not incredibly rude, because I don't like to debate people that can't have a rational conversation. So people that have done videos about me where they're just utterly, utterly immature, just filled with insults, I'll never debate them because, you know, I want to extend that courtesy to them. Okay. So I like to, you know, look at these people a little bit. And I spend a lot of time studying the person while I'm preparing for the debate.
Okay. Yeah, because I think one of the important aspects is to, you know, not that I had a whole bunch of debates or anything like that. Like you said, most of my conversations have taken place online and things like that, you know. So it's, and I've done some, you know, not necessarily formal or structured debates. Like I've done a couple informal, you know, where I'm just having basically a conversation with somebody, you know, and refuting their objections to Christianity. But in that, how, I get... What was I about to say? How is it that you, when you're preparing for somebody, when you're preparing to debate somebody, how do you, I guess, how do you come to the conclusion that this person is just, I guess, able to articulate your position correctly? Like, how do you come to that conclusion?
You mean my opponent?
Yeah, your opponent, yeah.
Well, I mean, you could never be so... absolutely sure on the opponent. You can only study them as best as you can. But I mean, I'm not really focused on them like articulating my position. I think I can explain to them pretty well. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in seeing if they're a respectable type of person, someone to be worthy debate, that kind of attitude. Because if they don't understand my position, because I've debated people who don't get my position flat out, and sometimes it just makes them look worse in the long run.
Yeah,
and so I don't see that as much of a stumbling block, I guess you could say.
Okay, so how would you prepare for somebody who has no information out there? You know, you debate some of the more popular atheists out there, but how would you handle somebody that's not a cosmic skeptic? You know, Alex O'Connor or Aaron Ra. You know, those type of guys. Somebody who doesn't have a whole bunch of information out there, who, you know, is just pretty much out there, but really doesn't have much content.
Yeah, well, if there's someone like that, there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to know the topic very well. I've debated someone like that. I think it was on the origins of Easter. And I didn't know who he was before that, but I wanted to debate the topic anyway. So I just knew the top. I just made sure I knew everything about that specific topic before I went in so that I wouldn't be caught off guard ever. And that's basically what you can only do in that situation. Just know the information well. Think of any possible objection anyone could possibly raise to the best of your ability. Write it all out in a text document so you have your notes there in front of you, and then just go from there.
Okay. Speaking of text documents, I was listening to William Lane Craig, right? And I really appreciate him, you know, and the preparation that he takes, you know what I mean? And he said that he uses, he has a folder. Basically, he has a folder. Whether saved on, you know, his computer or whatever, but he has a folder, and when he hears objections, when he's in debate and he hears objection, he goes into this folder and he just takes out this particular argument and he basically reads, when he's up there doing his rebuttal, he basically reads verbatim of what he has there. You know, obviously he goes in and, you know, he does his thing from memory and everything, but he takes out the particular argument. Do you have something like that? Do you store away files to later use in future debates from that in that kind of manner that William Lane Craig would do?
Yes, absolutely. What I have is basically more like outlines.
Okay.
So I have a bunch of different documents, like on Jesus mysticism or social science, different areas, and then I just kind of go through the outline and get to the bullet points I may have, and I just bring those up, or I may have specific studies or references in that section, and I'll use those. But that's what you have to do. You have to, the best tool you're going to need is a Word document. It's simple, but it gets what you need. And just fill it with all the information you want to remember. And then you can easily reference it then and there. So I use outlines because it's a lot easier to look at an outline and go through your bullet points than it is to look at like a whole like paragraph of like information and just read that. So that's what works for me the best, is just having an outline prepared.
Okay. So what do you do in a situation like you're up there, you're debating, and you, I guess the question, what have you ever had a time where you just felt like you embarrassed yourself? As an apologist, like you're like, man, dude, I didn't do too good. I just, you know, I foobarted. I messed up real bad. Have you had that experience yet? And if you have, how do you handle that situation?
I can't say I have. I mean, maybe some other people would disagree, but I mean, looking through my past debates, I can't really think of a time that happened.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's hard for me really to say. I mean, I feel like a lot of debates I've had, I've gotten a lot of good feedback from. I felt confident after them, so I've never really had a point where I didn't know what to say.
Okay. Yeah, because you know, it's funny because I'm nervous. As I go into this debate on Friday, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, this is like my first formal debate, you know what I mean? So I'm like, all right, man, you know, I don't want to mess up. I want to be able to represent Christ in the nature that he's called me to represent him. You know what I mean? I want to be able to articulate my position in a fashion that's going to glorify him, you know what I mean, in apologetics. So what do you say to somebody who is in that position like me, you know, that this is their first formal debate? You know what I mean? And they are looking to go into this with confidence. What would you say to that person?
Well, I would say use that anxiety and run with it. Think of every possible rabbit hole the debate could go down and then start building an outline for that. Because every debate I've had, I basically have an outline there ready to go on any possible thing they could say. I mean, you mentioned that I debated Godless Engineer, and that's true. And so I had an outline there. About 70% I didn't even use. It's like, wow. I was ready to talk about pagan deities, the ascension of Isaiah, all sorts of other things, but we didn't go down those trails. So I would tell people, use that anxiety and just start preparing, you know, exhaustively for the topic, because that's what I try to do. Mm-hmm. When I debated Tom Jump, I watched probably one of his debates a day for like 2 to 3 weeks. Just figuring out who he was, what he could possibly say. And having that prepared, I kind of had a bunch of arguments that I was able to write out in case he went down these rabbit holes. I didn't end up using most of them, but I had it there just in case. And every now and then I will have to go down one of those rabbit trolls. And I'm lucky that I have my outline available just in case.
Okay. So you said that you have the outline and that you didn't use 70% of that outline. So what would be the best manner for someone to prepare for such a situation like that? You know, where you're sitting there for weeks, you know, you're like, man, I know he's going to ask this. I know he's going to ask this. I have a whole bunch of stuff in his outline. He ain't going to get me. No way. And then you get into it and you go totally in a different direction, a total different direction. And you're like, now what? You know? Now, how do you prepare for that? How do you prepare for that situation?
Well, I think you just got to remember that if that's probably happening, either A, you didn't prepare enough, or B, you're not on topic. So you should prepare enough to cover every rabbit trail associated with that topic. But if you're debating someone, like when I was debating Ken Hovind, the debate was, is Christianity compatible with evolution? Mm-hmm. He started the debate into a debate about evolution itself, what it was. And luckily, the moderator had kept jumping in, going, that's not the debate. Get back on topic. But if he didn't, I would have eventually said that, you know, you're trying to change the topic because you can't debate the actual topic. So that's a good phrase to remember. If you feel like someone's going off topic, just say, well, I feel like you're trying to go to a different topic because you can't debate the topic we were supposed to prepare for. Because, you know, you should have every associated rabbit trail covered, I would say. Mm-hmm. That should be your goal. And if you feel like you're baiting something you're not really prepared for, either you didn't prepare enough or you're not on topic.
Okay. At what point should somebody, I guess somebody decline a debate? You know what I mean? If somebody says, no, you know, I'd rather not, or I'd rather not debate you. What would be some of the red flags that you would signal? Besides, I know you pointed out somebody who's overtly rude, you know what I mean? Doesn't have the ability to have a simple conversation, you know, because they act belligerent or whatever. What would be some other red flags that would trigger you to say, nope, I don't think this guy is worthy of a challenge or a debate with me?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I don't debate people who don't have an audience because I get like atheists or random people challenging me to a debate like once a week. And I can't debate every person out there. Mm-hmm. So for me, I try to debate people more with like roughly the same size audience or so. I mean, it doesn't have to be exact or anything. I'm pretty flexible on that. But that's one. Another thing might be if they're trying to rush it. I like to spend at least 2 weeks preparing to try to get to know the person. If they're trying to rush you into debate, that's usually a bad sign. Like last week or so, I had an atheist ask to debate me on a topic within like 2 days. And I said, I'm busy, first of all. That's not enough time to prepare. Can't we put it off for like a month or so? And I didn't hear back from him. So, you know, he may have been trying to catch me off guard type thing. And, you know, I don't think that's courteous. You should give your opponent enough time to prepare. You shouldn't want to just rush them into something. If they want to do it, I mean, you know, that's their fault. I always try to offer my debate opponents a couple of weeks out. Some of my recent debates, I was turned down on that. And they said, no, let's go right now. Or like within a week or something. And I was like, well, all right, good luck. And so, you know, if they do that, that's on them, but you shouldn't put yourself in that situation.
Sure, sure. That's a good token. That's a good token right there, information right there. So what would you say as an apologist? What would you say is your number one tool?
It's a good question. I would say just probably my Word documents. Just the outlines itself, because you're not going to remember everything, but you want to give the impression you know a good amount. So you should have the Word documents in there. When I debated Aaron Raw, we both had our computers with us, so we could reference things on our computer. That's normal. Mm-hmm. You should have that kind of thing there. Another great tool is your own anxiety. Don't get overconfident. Don't use that anxiety to prepare. Like when I was getting ready to debate Godless Engineer, I was preparing as if I was debating the leading scholar on Jesus mysticism. Mm-hmm. Even though I know that's not really him, and he's not really that good at debating. I mean, just, you know, unfortunately, it's not his specialty, I guess you could say. But I treated it like he was going to know literally everything I knew and then something else. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, prepared extensively. I watched so many of his videos, his live streams, trying to get an idea of what he could possibly say. Okay. So use your anxiety, use your Word documents, and use that to your advantage. And never underestimate someone, depending on the size of the audience. What I always tell people is I'm a Christian apologist, and I tell them that on purpose, because in the atheist community, the phrase Christian apologist has become a buzz phrase for derogatory or stupid. So I get into a lot of debates. They know I'm a Christian apologist, and I can tell flat out they've already assumed I'm stupid. So they don't prepare. And I catch a lot of people off guard because of that, because I know the debate topic very well. I came with my sources. They didn't. And so because the atheist community has done this to themselves, they turned the phrase Christian apologist into a derogatory phrase. You know, I use that to my advantage.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, because it's, I guess, not knowing what the greatest tools are, you know what I mean? So not knowing what the greatest tools are, not knowing what would fit you know what I mean? Trying to figure out what helps you get through the process of a debate. You know, I guess could pose some challenges. You know what I mean? It can be very difficult sometimes, especially if this is your first one. You know, you don't have a whole bunch of experience. You know, it could pose some challenges to you. How much time do you spend in prayer before you go into a debate? How much time do you spend in prayer, or do you fast or anything, or anything of that nature to prepare to debate an apologist or anything like that?
I don't fast. I don't fast that often.
Okay.
It would only be if I'm going through a personal struggle. I do pray a lot, but it's random. I don't know if I ever really timed it. Like, I don't set times or anything. I've tried. I'm not really good at keeping a schedule in that regard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think about it a lot. I dwell on it a lot. I pray on it a lot. I ask for guidance a lot. But I can't really put a number to it.
Okay. What in preparing for a debate, what are some of the aspects that you take into consideration? Like, what are some of the aspects that you take into consideration?
Yeah, well, one thing I will take into consideration is my opponent and what they think is confidence. And then I try to project that back to them. So if I feel like a lot of, from studying the opponent, if they feel like a lot of smiling projects confidence, I'll try to do that more in the debate. If I feel like, you know, a poker face is what projects confidence to them, I'll try to do that more in the debate. So I try to study their own psychology and use that against them, because I have found that, you know, half of the debate is studying the opponent and knowing the way they think, what they react to, and then throwing that back against them. And it actually does, I feel, help out in the long run. Because you don't want someone, you don't want to debate against someone who's so overconfident that they can't even listen to reason. Because I've seen debates happen where the atheist just knows the Christian is stupid and wrong. So regardless if the Christian says something right, they just dismiss it. Now, that doesn't mean they're right, but the audience seems to think that that makes them look more right. So I try to not let that happen in the debate because, you know, you're also, you know, there's also an audience at play. And you have to remember that, you know, people are going to go on their emotions sometimes. So you got to use that as well. It's you got to know the knowledge, but you also have to know the psychology of your opponent. And it makes it a little bit more difficult, but it's important to do that kind of stuff if you want to give the information in a presentable way to the audience.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good, man. Sounds good. So you mentioned the how much time you take to prepare for a debate. In that, what is you said you take what? You said 2 to 3 weeks?
About, yeah. I try to do about 2 or 3 weeks minimally. If I can do more, of course, it's always better.
So do you try to read all their literature exhaustively? And like if somebody who's a writer, you know what I mean? Somebody who likes to write or, you know, do you like, because I think that's one of the pitfalls that I've sort of like, I'll try to watch every video that this dude has that I'm going to be, I try to watch everything that he has. You know what I mean? So I'm like, all right, so I can be ready for whatever. So do you do that? Do you try to watch and listen to everything exhaustively or you just sort of pick little nuggets here and there?
Well, no, I don't try to listen to everything because some people can have content that's, you know, hours upon hours and you just don't have time to go through it all. Mm-hmm. What I would do is try to find the stuff relevant to the topic. So when I was debating David Fitzgerald, he has a bunch of books on the topic on Jesus mysticism, but we were specifically debating regards to like pagan deities or mystery cults. So I just went to the chapters that were associated with that. Once I read those, I started reading the whole books in general. And by the time the debate came around, I had read most of his stuff anyway. So I start with the more specific stuff, and then I branch out to less related stuff.
Okay, because I kind of figure that as you prepare for a debate, by reading their other stuff and listening to their other stuff, you sort of get an understanding of how they argue, where their arguments are coming from. So I guess that's where I was thinking as far as like when it comes to preparing for debates, that's where my mind is at. I'm trying to figure out how this dude is, you know what I mean? What's his mentality? What's his attitude, you know what I mean? Is he a fiery guy, you know what I mean? Or is he just a mundane, chill dude, you know? Like, speaking of fiery and getting going or a fiery attitude, the debate you had with Aaron Ra, I was laughing, man. I was like, man, you know, he got going, especially when Eric Hernandez got up there and asked that question, man. I was like, man, he tripping. He tripping hard. So when you're in the debate, how do you handle a situation in the midst of a debate, somebody starts behaving in that nature? How would you handle that situation?
Let it play out. Because 9 times out of 10, the audience is going to notice. And they're going to notice who looks more calm and confident and who's being belligerent and loud and screaming. And it happened when I debated Tom Jump. It happened when I debated Aaron Raw. It happened when I debated G-Man. They always are going off the deep end, and they look more emotional, belligerent. And if you just sit there and let them do it, the audience is going to realize, you know, who is more confident and who has the information on their side. So just let it happen. Don't let them get to you. A lot of people I've debated try to get to me, to get like some sort of emotional reaction out of me. Mm-hmm. And very rarely do I give in. Sometimes it's necessary to, you know, because if they're like, you know, when G-Man was, you know, talking over me and trying to interrupt me, I had to jump in at some point and put him in his place. But sometimes you just got to let him do it and the audience will see who they are. And that just is more beneficial to you. So just sit there, present the information, and don't worry about what they're going to say or do. It's not relevant to the debate.
Is that a signal that you've won the debate when they begin to act like that? Is that a flag that says, hey,
maybe. I don't know if we should really talk about debates of winning and losing because, you know, I've had debates where I feel like I clearly won and then some radical atheist on the other side says I lost.
Yeah.
I mean, people will see it in their own subjective eyes. I like to say that I think I did well and my opponent did not do that well to present the topic. So I think it's a clear sign that I'm doing well and they're not.
Okay. Yeah, man. Because I was, when I was watching, I said, man, On Ra is losing it, man. So I was like, so I thought that was just super duper hilarious, man. I thought that was so funny, man.
Well, yeah,
like,
I mean, man, just remember in that debate, he presented like two or three studies, which I had read beforehand, and he didn't read any of my studies. And I brought a stack of all of my studies with him for him to take home. It was given offered to him twice at the end of the night. He didn't take it.
Yeah, I think he did a video afterwards about faith too. His definition of faith. I can't remember if he did a video right after or was it right before. But I was like, yeah,
he's it was right after, and I responded, and he responded, then I responded again.
Yeah, interesting. Always interesting. So I want to do like some kind of crossfire with you real quick, just to pose some questions to you and see what will be your response to these questions. Do you mind that? Do you mind if I throw some questions at you? All right, cool. So what do you say about the moral argument? Atheists claim, I know atheists like Tom Junk, they claim that they have an objective moral basis. What would you say to that? I think that's the most ridiculous thing to say from an atheistic materialistic position. But he's the way he argues is as if he can just supplant the foundation that we have in God as a moral objective giver. And he could say, well, naturalistic pantheism is my objective moral standard. Like, what do you, how do you respond to that?
That's something I would do sort of like a Q&A going back and forth with him to start to show the own absurdity of it. Because I've played that out in my head a couple times based on what he said in past debates before when I was preparing to debate him. Because he argues for a naturalistic grounding. Well, I mean, that's going to suffer from things like G.E. Moore's critiques of it, like the open question argument, the is-ought fallacy. You cannot derive an ought from an is. You can't reduce morality to something natural. There's too many problems with that. And then you start looking at just the basic ontology of moral prescriptions, moral obligations, the moral idea. These all entail a personal source. And, I remember when I think it was Blake Junty was trying to explain this to him. And all he kept saying was like, well, it could just be like there's some sort of like special law within naturalistic pantheism that can explain all this. And I'm like, well, that's just ad hoc. You're just multiplying entities beyond necessity. If it looks like it's a personal, necessary, conscious source, it most likely is. We don't have to say that it just mimics that and is something naturalistic. So I would have to walk him through that kind of thing and ask him questions to show the absurdity of it. Something that, Trent Dougherty did as well, in just a simple kind of way.
Yeah, I think I saw that debate with Trent. I think I saw that one. It was interesting. I kind of, I was looking at Trent. I think I have the right person that I'm talking about in my mind. But some of the theological aspects that he was saying, I was kind of like, I wasn't really feeling. But I think he did sort of challenge Tom Junk. On his position, on the aspects. So say somebody like, let me see. I mean, if I present an argument saying that God, naturalistic or materialistic foundations are more, has a higher probability to explain logic, to explain rationale. How would you explain that? How would you go through that process?
Could you say that question again one more time?
So if I'm an atheist or come from a materialistic, naturalistic position, and I try to say that moral and logic, the moral position can be founded in a materialistic worldview, or can be substantiated, or the foundation of it can be substantiated in a materialistic worldview, how would you respond to that?
Well, let's stick with morals because that's more what I do. I have a different view on logic that I don't think the atheists would object to. But for morals, let's start with like moral prescriptions. So we need to think about what prescriptions are. They're not descriptions, but moral oughts are prescriptions. But it takes a prescriber to give prescriptions. Prescriptions cannot be found in just the basic descriptions of reality, like you could say with like logical or physical descriptions. Mm-hmm. So moral prescriptions entail a prescriber. It makes sense if I prescribe you something. Like, let's say I need you to like watch my house for me. Mm-hmm. I have just prescribed a moral ought for you. Okay, that's something between two agents. But if there are objective prescriptions that we have to follow, if you believe there's objective morality, then there's got to be an objective prescriber that have given these objective prescriptions to us. So just the very essence of objective morality entails there is a prescriber there, because these cannot be found in descriptions of reality.
So what would you say if someone argued and said that the existence of God, and you can't prove the existence of God. There's no evidence for the existence of God.
Yeah, one thing I'd say is, yeah, I know. It's not about proof. We can't prove anything. You can't prove you're not a brain in a vat right now. You can't prove the universe came into existence 5 minutes ago. It's not about proof. It's about what is the best explanation of reality. Think about how we know historical facts. We can't prove historical facts. We say this is probably what happened based on the best available data. We don't even necessarily prove scientific facts. We say this is probably true based on the best available data, and given that it hasn't been falsified yet. So, that's just setting a standard up they don't have for any other belief they have. So why does it have to be about proof? What does the evidence suggest? Is there enough evidence to suggest theism is likely, that it's more probable than naturalism? That's what we should go on. What does the data imply? What is the best inference from the data?
Okay. So, all right. Yeah, I mean, because once again, we run into those situations. Like, I will categorize myself as a presuppositional apologist, where I argue from the uniformity of nature, I argue from the transitional argument for God, moral argument, logic, and things like that. How would you... Do you see it as a possibility to be able to sort of, if you will, combine the two, of evidential apologists versus a presup apologist or classical apologist? How would you be able to combine the two? You think both can mesh together? Sort of going a little bit offside, I think all this is a bit yarn of debate. So how would you clarify that?
Yeah, I don't know really, because I don't really hold to the presup view when it comes to that. I found a lot of, we're talking about different types of apologetics: presuppositional apologetics, classical apologetics. So this is a method for reaching non-believers.
Sure.
I have found a lot of success with the classical method.
Okay.
So that's what I tend to stick with. I don't really know much about presup. In my experience, maybe I just haven't seen that much. I've not seen a lot of success with presup. I know when I was getting ready to debate Destiny, He only debated precepts before this, and he was not convinced. He always had arguments. But when he debated me, he just said, I don't know what to say to this kind of stuff. He was completely unprepared. So I just found more success in there. That's what I stick with. So if you found the success in precept, more power to you. But I tend to stick with the classical method.
Sounds good. Yeah, man. So, we talked about a variety of things in apologetics. Trying to prepare for debate. So lastly, what would you say to some... Well, I have two more questions. What would you say to someone who is looking at the possibility of getting into apologetic ministry? What would be some guiding words that you would give somebody who is looking from the outside, who maybe look at you and say, Mike Jones over there, Aspiring Philosophy, has really, quote-unquote, spoke some good stuff to me. I feel that God is calling me into apologetics. What would you say? What would you say to somebody who feels that way?
Well, first I would ask them why they want to get into apologetics. Because people have asked me this before, and I go, well, why do you want to get into apologetics? And they go, well, I want to be a famous apologist, or I want to make this my full-time job. And I'm like, stop right there. Don't do it. Because you have the wrong motive. You either want to be famous, or you want to make money off of this. I got into this because I just really had a passion for it. Never expected to eventually be able to do this full time. That was never my intent. My original intent was just to do about 13 or 14 videos and call it quits. And it just kind of kept going. So that's what happened for me, because there's a lot of work involved in this, with a lot of struggles. When you first start doing it, you'll see very little fruit. It takes a while to actually start seeing fruit, refining your skills, getting better at it. It doesn't just happen overnight. So if you don't have a passion for this, or your main goal is to try to live off of it or get famous, it's not going to work. And I've seen other apologists fizzle out because that was their original goal. So you got to have a passion for it, and you got to be content with the idea that I could do this the rest of my life, never get a dime from it, and still be happy. And if you can't say that, then don't do it. And so that's what I tell people, because 90% of the apologists out there aren't going to get a dime for it. There's just a few exceptions of people who have made it their living. I'm blessed enough that that's going to be me pretty soon. where I could do it full time. But it took 7 years to get there. It didn't happen overnight. And there was a lot of struggles, a lot of like all-nighters, working a full-time job, not getting a weekend off. Like, I've not really had a weekend off in 7 years, really.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
I've always been doing something in terms of apologetics for 7 years, but it's my passion. Mm-hmm. So I love doing it. I don't want to take a weekend off either, because there's always something to read. There's always something to do. So that's what I do. So for me, it's not a job. It's just what I love to do anyway. So I would do it even if I still had a full-time job, just not as much as I can do now.
Mm-hmm. Cool, man. Yeah, because I see a lot of people I see a lot of videos. I'm like, man, that looks like a Mike Jones video. And then I go in there, I'm like, oh, that ain't Mike Jones. Who is this? You know, it's the similarities are there. You know what I mean? So I'm like, you know, and a lot of young cats, you know what I mean? A lot of young guys, you know, they have their apologists, you know, they have their individuals that they look up to. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's... as somebody who has the experience that you have, you know what I mean? You know, it's always good and it's always appreciative to hear those words from you. You know what I mean? To be able to say, you know what? You know, if you are doing it for the wrong reason, don't do it. You know what I mean? If you're not doing it for the glory of God, don't do it. You know, if you're not doing it because you want to bring this person to Christ, don't do it. Those should be the overall foundational aspects of why we're doing apologetics. So with that said, we've talked about, you know, debate preparation, what it takes to do that. We talked about, you know, a little bit some argumentation that the atheist might throw at you, you know, and we talked about why be apologist. What are some aspects, you know, of somebody who thinks they're called into apologetics? So the final question is the most important question of them all, you know. So if you can give me a rundown of what the gospel truth is, Mike, I really appreciate it.
Sure. I want to start with just basic psychology, though. So regardless of what we do in life, you're going to feel superior to someone else. If you are a religious person, if you are a religious Christian or a Muslim or a Jew, you can't help but feel superior to people that are not in your religion. But if you're an atheist, you feel superior to religious people because you look down at those ignorant buffoons that you don't worship and go to church on Sunday or do any of that stuff. But what if you're just a hardworking, decent person? You can't help but feel superior to lazy people. But the gospel says you're a moral failure. The gospel says you need to be saved and there's nothing you can do to achieve salvation, and that you can only get through life through the grace of Christ. So the gospel says, regardless of what you do, you shouldn't feel superior to anyone. You know, I know there are a lot of atheists online who I've debated who probably are better people than me. They donate more time to charity. I've seen them definitely going out and volunteering more. Well, how could I admit such a thing? Aren't I supposed to be better than them because I'm a Christian? Well, here's the truth. The truth is I'm a sinner and saved by grace. So it doesn't matter how good I am. What matters is how good he was. I'm the most evil person I know. How could I feel morally superior to anyone else? I can't get through life without grace, without salvation. My works are meaningless. If that's at the center of your life, that's going to equip you to change. That's going to equip you to really see the world through different eyes. So the gospel is the only view out there that says you can't feel superior to anyone if you want to follow me. And that's why it is different than everything else out there, because the gospel is the true answer to the problem that is plaguing humanity, to the depravity of humanity. And that's by getting rid of the pride right then and there.
All right. All right. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike, man. Hey. Thank you. I appreciate all you've done. I appreciate all the content that you put out there and the efforts that you put towards to equip the body of Christ in this crazy world that we live in. As you know, I don't know if you checked out anything that I have on my YouTube page or anything like that, but I have a whole slew of debates, man. And it would be an honor if I can get you on to debate somebody. It would be an absolute honor to have you on. So I would love to have a chance to converse with you on that topic, that subject matter, to see if we can get that ball rolling. But, you know, with that said, man, I appreciate you coming on. And I'll be praying for your ministry, you know, that God will continue to use you. You know, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, all right. Well, that's it, folks. My man, Mike Jones, Inspired Philosophy. You know, every time I hear his name, I think about that song, that rap artist back in the day. You know, Mike Jones. He say his name all on the album. Mike Jones, you know. Yeah, back in my rap day, back in my day, man. Back in my heyday, man, before I was saved by grace, man, when I used to listen to that stuff, man. But, yeah, I always that jingle always comes to my head whenever I hear Mike's name. So it's all good. It's all good. Once again, you know, I appreciate all the information. And hopefully you do, too, that all the information that Mike put out there, you know, in preparing what he does to prepare for his debates. You know, if you are an aspiring, you know, apologist, and you're looking for an opportunity, you know, to be able to exalt that gift that you feel that God has called you to do, take what Mike said in consideration. You know, if you're doing this for the wrong reasons, for the wrong objectives, you know, then we have a problem. You know, as you go into your apologetic career, or if you feel that God is calling you apologetics, pray on it. You know, pray on it. Take time to sit down and just get on your knees and pray on it. Search the scriptures. See if God is calling you into that. Please don't do this. Like Mike said, don't do this for the money. Don't do this because you want to be popular or you want to write a couple of books and you want to feel that you're this great doctor of philosophy or anything like that. Do it because you love Christ. Do it because Christ is at the center of everything that you do. And if you do it that way, you'll have the right heart to do it. You'll do it for the correct reasons. And God will be glorified. What more can we ask for that? So before we get out of here, I do want to go over, rehash the upcoming events, shows that I have coming up. October 25th, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I have a debate myself with Andrew Griffin. He's a Unitarian, and we'll be debating, does Jesus need to be God in order to atone for the sins of the world? October 26th, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be another debate. Jonathan McGlatchy will be debating John Gleason, and he is also known as a godless engineer, and they'll be debating the historicity of Jesus Christ. October 30th, 6 p.m., again, Ricky Cronin will be debating Miles Patrick, and they'll be debating, is obedience to the law required for salvation? And finally, November 1st at 6 p.m., Tyler Gray, calls himself the Snake is Right, will be debating Miles Kettleson, and they'll be debating, can atheism account for objective morality? So as you know, I have a whole bunch of debates, and if you have time, go check out my YouTube page, check out my Facebook page, and you'll see all the upcoming debates coming up. Also, I forgot to add that I have two more debates that just got confirmed, and they'll be debates, two flat earth debates. Can you believe it? Flat earth. Can you believe it? We have two of them. Two of them, man. So it should be interesting, man. That's going to be an interesting one. But nonetheless, we have those coming up in December. But be on the lookout for all the content. Be on the lookout for all the updates. And if you can, take time to subscribe, like, follow the Facebook page, the YouTube page, the Gospel Truth. Also, you know, go ahead and share this content. You know, with that said, I'm going to get out of here. I appreciate you. May God bless you. And may God keep you. I'm out.